Hey Central Ohio, the nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.
We are back, Ruthless Aggression. We are a week away from WrestleMania. By the time you hear this, 9 days out in Las Vegas. I am Pierce. I will be there. I will be booed up, so please don't try any stupid shit. I'm here with Rob and Chris, who will be watching from the comfort of their own home and saving thousands of dollars. Chris, man, this is your first WrestleMania on Blue Sky. Are you ready?
It's going to be interesting just because, like, I'm intrigued to see how much juice the site has. There was some good energy during the Super Bowl. Mania is a different thing because, like, to me, it seems like there's not a lot of WWE talk on Blue Sky. It's mostly AEW-centered from what I've seen.
Really?
So
is that, well, I guess I was going to ask, like, why do you think that is? Do you think it's just, like, the crowd that would more likely touch off on Blue Sky than Twitter?
It seems as so, yeah.
We can go all day about Blue Sky and Twitter. I really wish that I could just fully jump on the Blue Sky and leave the Nazi app behind. But, you know, something's keeping me over there. But anyway, we got a couple of things for WrestleMania 41 that we will touch off on. Most of the card we will get to next week in your official WrestleMania 41 pre-show. But for now, we'll touch off on those couple of things. And then we're going to get to the quote-unquote 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. If you had to think, no, it's not the 25th anniversary of WrestleMania. No one ever knows why they decided to do that and just not wait for the actual 25th anniversary. But I digress. Let's jump to a couple of things that are making headlines in the wrestling world over the last week. And we start with last Friday night, Tiff and Charlotte were going off script very badly. It was 6 minutes of, I would say, hot garbage, because again, no one's on the same plane as each other. You could also say it probably gave the match a little bit of the heat that it needed, depending on what, you know, depending on how you feel about it. Otherwise, this made headlines for all of the wrong reasons. Charlotte, as Charlotte is prone to do when she gets in front of cameras and crowds that do not like her, she fumbled, she flustered, she caved under pressure. Tiffany, I would say, rose up to the occasion while at the same time throwing in some jabs that, let's be honest, Charlotte was giving her them haymakers early. So she coming back strong. She came back with the love, hate. And it's seeming like she really hates Charlotte. I don't know. Maybe that's me just generalizing based off of what I'm seeing and what I'm hearing. Ultimately, this was a segment that went off the rails faster than you could say, yeah. How do you feel about what went down on Friday? Does this make you more interested in the title match at WrestleMania? Did this just become your pee break? What say you guys to the buffoonery that we saw last Friday in Chicago?
I said last time we did this pod that program was the only thing that I really had a negative interest in. I wouldn't say that the segment necessarily improved my interest in it. I can see why people would want that kind of heat, obviously. It feels like to this point, how we got here was so, it's been hard to watch. It's The program hasn't really been that good since it started. Charlotte had the Rumble win. She came out. She immediately got booed and rejected by the crowd. So you knew from there it was gonna be something because you knew the crowd was gonna pick Tiff. They clearly have. They've already made their decision. That's been known. I knew that was gonna happen because that's just how this usually goes. It's whenever somebody gets hot, the crowd stays hot with them. They don't pick the people that they used to be around. Look what happened with Alexa. She came around. She got so hot. Nobody cared that she beat Becky. Nobody cared that she was about to beat Bailey and Sasha. In fact, she got cheered for interrupting a dramatic segment between those two when she made her Raw debut. This is just how that crowd dynamic is usually gone. They usually will go with who, and they'll always stick with it. And it's just, she hadn't let Tiff get anything in edgewise, and even with the comments Tiff made, Charlotte tried to override them both. Tiff said, told her that she wasn't the queen of shit, and Charlotte immediately talked over that. They got into it again. And then Tiff made the comments about, you know, her dad. And so what does Charlotte do? She says that Kaiser was in her DMs. Like, come on.
She did not know. Come on. She did not know what to do because her back was against the wall, both with her opponent and the crowd. And she fumbled. I mean, there's a lot of ways that you can go to respond to the realness. And I understand, like, no one ever wants to go through 3 divorces. No one ever wants to be compared to their father in divorces. And that's where Charlotte's at right now in her 30s. Like, it's sad on a personal level. You know, if I was her, I'd be fucking distraught. But also, like, yeah, I understand, you know, being hurt by those comments. But you also have to do a lot better than, oh, yeah, your man was in my DMs. I think I saw the tweet. Kaiser is the first person, the first man in history that everyone does not believe is a cheat. They heard that and I was like, no, you're fucking lying. Shut up. You're fucking lying.
Two things for me, because last time we did this, you know, they had that face-to-face that Charlotte kind of bullied Tiffany during. It was like, well, you know, Charlotte doesn't have to hold her hand during it, and she stood up for herself, and apparently, you know, it got to a point where people backstage, they're not thrilled about it, but, like, they realized that she kind of had to do that.
Yeah, that's what the Fightful reports were saying, that some felt that she did what she had to do.
Mm-hmm.
Should it have maybe gotten squashed before it got to that point? Yeah, sure. Probably.
But if Charlotte hasn't been willing to do business, why should you expect it to be squashed?
I agree.
So, like, yeah, it kind of adds to the match a little bit. I think, you know, Charlotte's legacy is kind of on the line. If you want to go into that sort of debate, you know, first take style. But
that is a really good debate to have, actually.
It's a big moment for her. I mean, usually her WrestleMania matches have been good. At least, you know, in the singles one, you can say what you want about 35, but that was, you know, at the end of a 5.5-hour show. But, you know, recently, the Asuka match was good at 34, and I had the wrong result. The both Rhea matches were pretty good. So, like, she has a history of, you know, delivering at WrestleMania. It's just a matter of, you know, is she going to, and are they going to get the right result here? Because if Charlotte ends up winning after all this, then, I mean, we've talked about this quite a bit, too, in the past 6 months. There's not a lot of people that these crowds boo.
No.
Or that they're disinterested in. And Charlotte is both.
Yeah.
Okay, so I want to on that point before we even decide to go back to her legacy. Do you think that those boos are because the crowd realizes that Charlotte's a great heel, and even when they try to shoehorn her into being a face, they're telling you they want her to be a heel? Or are we talking about an instance of potential go-away heat? Like, they dislike her so much, they just want her to shut the fuck up and go away. Which one is it?
I think it's a mix of both of those. Plus, like,
she wasn't favored in the Rhea feud at all. LA was booing the crap out of her.
Yeah.
Same wrestler for 10 years. You know,
that too. No, she Sasha did not. Sasha didn't, but that's... But whatever. Exactly. And people knew that she was good and talented so that people wanted her to succeed.
If you go watch NXT from 10 years ago, Charlotte's still like, oh, you know, I'm Rick's daughter. I'm going to be around the title, you know, like... And I do feel bad for her in a way, because, you know, 3 divorces, you know, growing up with Ric Flair's her dad, you know, the stuff with her brother. Yeah, I mean, obviously, but, like, you do need to be professional in the workplace as well. You know,
and it's not to say that, you know, okay, Tiff did what she had to do and she went off script. Like, that's bad too. But like, who is the leader in this scenario?
Exactly.
Right. Who's supposed to be the big bro? Who's supposed to be the one kind of shepherding this feud to its end game? It's Charlotte. It has to be Charlotte. And Charlotte hasn't met that need. And the build for the match has suffered to the point where, yeah, you have to do this. You know, like, I give Tiffany credit. Like, yeah, you know, you never want to go off script and have the shit just be off the rails and, you know, get the criticism it's been getting. But at the same time, you know, we gave her shit for not adapting. Well, she's adapting. She's adapting to the best of her ability. And even if it's a hard turn, it's a turn that at least, you know, she knows she got to make. So, you know, I give her credit. I don't, you know, I do think, you know, when you brought up the question about her legacy, part of me was like, really? Like, you know, all the championships and the accolades, and like, she's one of the five greatest women's wrestlers in the company ever. But at the same time, like, yeah, she's been gone for a minute. She comes back. She, you know, as Charlotte's prone to do, gets the silver spoon and gets the immediate WrestleMania title match. And, you know, just like a couple years ago when she just beat Ronda and all of a sudden she was the champion and was champion through Mania. You know, it's tiresome. It's something that folks got to call into question. And then absolutely how she's conducted herself in this feud is cause for questioning that legacy. Yeah, I mean, it's a hard say with her, you know? Yeah.
And historically for her, too, like, she's one of the only women that don't really have stance.
You know? No, she does not.
There's a couple of people taking up for Charlotte online, but, you know, it's not like even someone like, you know, Dana Burke or Alicia Fox had shooters out there. Charlotte really nothing. Like, never really had. Like,
Charlotte, no, I take it back. I met one super uber big Charlotte fan back in like 2019 for WrestleMania 35. I feel like he's still out here, you know, charlatting it up. But yeah, to your point, she, you know, for whatever reason, she don't have just the fan value, you know, that some of the other women have. And It's a very interesting case with her. For someone to have the brand name and the cachet and the accolades that she has and resume she has to not be beloved is a very interesting thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we'll go deeper into the match next week when we do our WrestleMania pre-show. For now, let's move on to a match that will not be happening at WrestleMania. We were hearing the rumors that there was a match that would not be happening. Folks deduced that it was Kevin Owens and Randy Orton, and now we know why. Kevin Owens needs neck surgery, which is the worst thing that you can hear if you are a wrestler or a wrestling fan. The implication is that he is going to be out multiple years. That's really tough before you even get to the, you know, this feud finally, you know, being close to the payoff. Kevin Owens is one of the universally beloved wrestlers in WWE. It's very hard to find someone that has a bad word to say about Kevin Owens in ring or out ring. So it sucks, you know, I guess maybe the good thing is he gets to spend even more time with his family, but yeah, no, it sucks for his family that, you know, the dude who's been providing has made his whole career off of being a provider. Now he's, you know, sitting on the couch at home for multiple years, potentially. Sucks for Randy, because Randy's fought his way back from multiple injuries, the time off that he took, and now he's not going to get the payoff of this WrestleMania match. So it sucks, man. We'll focus on KO first. And I mean, it's the obvious, you know, it's a get well soon, it's a hope we see you soon. But I mean, Big E hurt his neck 3 years ago. He's not close to coming back. So who knows?
Yeah, that's really the thing, you know, with neck surgery in particular. Like, you know, you don't know. You don't know how he's going to recover. You don't know. He's obviously in his 40s as well. He's wrestled for 25 years. Like, It sucks because yeah, I mean he, for me personally, you know, when Brock wasn't around and you know Punk wasn't there anymore, he kind of became my guy, and you know now he's gone and it's just like wow, this kind of sucks in general because a lot of the wrestlers I like are just getting older, getting close to retirement. It's just like well, just another one there. But you know if he truly is done, like. He wound up having an incredible run. I think better than anyone could have expected. You know, the Austin match, the match with Sammy. And, you know, even again, if he's done his last match with Sammy in Canada, you know, what a way to go out. But hopefully he's not. Obviously, hopefully he gets well soon. But, yeah, just really sad. Really kind of bummed for the rest of SmackDown after hearing that. And, yeah, I mean, it's a bummer, man. You just you hope for the best.
Yeah, I think he's one of, if not the best NXT product ever made. I mean, he's arguably had two Hall of Fame careers before the Roman feud and after the Roman feud. He became so ingrained in everything. I think few people.
He made the Ezekiel stuff fun.
He did make the Ezekiel stuff fun. I mean, he was. People wanted him to just win the title from Roman just for a little bit. I mean, like he. People were comparing him to Mick Foley. I think that's a good comparison, honestly. And yeah, like he went out with a bang. The feud with Cody was great. Match with Sammy was amazing. That's it. He's had a hell of a run. I mean, it sucks, but he's had a hell of a run. He's one half of a main event at WrestleMania. It was a tag man event. No one's ever done that. That's a testament to all four of those guys that were in that match. They won, yeah. So yeah,
the year before he wrestled Stone Cold in an actual match.
Like, yeah,
it wasn't an angle.
It's crazy.
Yeah. So like, you know, again, if it is it for him, what a way to go out. But you know, hopefully he's around. Just and I'm glad he re-signed.
Yeah.
You know,
same.
Because you know he'll probably have money still coming in, which is important. And yeah, I mean it just and it sucks. I don't know if they're gonna do Kevin and Cena. I think maybe they would have. Now that's off the table. But yeah, man, just really hoping he gets better as soon as possible.
Absolutely. And, you know, obviously this creates a hole for for Randy Orton at WrestleMania. I know they did the tease of it potentially being Nick Aldis. I don't know if it's enough time to make that match what it needs to be.
It's not, but what it is time is for Nick Aldis to sick somebody on Orton.
Yes, it is.
Try to sick somebody, to handpick somebody. And there's, I think, two possibilities out there in the weeds right now. One is Rusev. The other is Malakai or Aleister Black, however they're going to refer to him. The thing is that I can't necessarily picture Orton missing Mania, so he's going to be there.
Yeah.
The other thing is, he would need to win if he was facing Kevin Owens or if he wasn't facing Cena anyway, because I think it's Randy Orton and things matter. So wherever you debut against him, they'd be strong enough to be able to withstand that. But I think that you can do that if you pull it off right. But I tend to think that Orton is going to be there. It's just a matter of who.
Yeah.
Who else, rather?
Won't even deny. They'll probably do the open challenge or whatever.
Well, they'll probably kind of do it like Seth and Cody a few years ago.
Yes. Okay. And yeah, I mean, it'll be good. It does suck for Randy, though. You know, the big
of course.
Never got to happen because he got hurt. Now, you know, this isn't going to get to happen. And you know, it's a bummer. But again, I think he's getting the same match in St. Louis, and that's going to be really cool. But yeah, it's going to be interesting because I think. Yeah, Elster and Rusev are good choices, but do you want to bring him in and have him lose right away?
Yeah, that's the dilemma. You know, you bring Rusev in and you have Rusev, you know, your crowd goes up Rusev Dan and he eats an RKO and a pin. Then Rusev's kind of back to where he was when he left WWE 4 years ago or so. You know, maybe Aleister Black can eat that loss. Maybe. But you also know that they potentially have big plans for him. Why would you want to immediately start him off on a bad put? Yeah,
that's the hang up there. The options are kind of few and far between. Again, I just can't see him miss.
Right.
So does it become a match? Well, I guess does it become a match or does it become an angle? And I guess they.
Yeah, I mean, it'll be. We'll see.
We'll see.
If you look at top guys who don't have anything, like Sammy, but that doesn't make any
Sammy
sense.
Hasn't been around. Fight for Kevin. Sammy hasn't been around.
Right.
He could fight.
That would be silly, yeah, though. Because exactly. It's not like it's Orton who took him out.
Yeah. And Sammy and Orton fighting. So, like, yeah. So it's going to be interesting. I don't know. Again, I don't think we'll know until the match.
We're not going to know until, we're not going to know until the match.
Yeah.
Not going to know until the bell, until right before the bell.
Yep. The main event, well, I guess it wasn't really in the main event. It was really the closing segment of SmackDown was really big. We will touch on that next week in our WrestleMania pre-show with the triple threat. We now know one part of the favor. I know we were kind of like, oh, it's for the WWE Championship match. We don't know that for sure yet. So we're going to wait until we meet again next week when we should have a clearer picture of, you know, what the lowdown is for that triple threat. I will say we already know that match is closing the show on Saturday. CM Punk is WrestleMania main eventer. We can finally shut the fuck up about that. We know that obviously Cena and Cody are closing out night two. And then the fun part is just figuring out the in between. So, like I said, go ahead.
They kind of tipped their hand with some t-shirts that came out for the show. Bianca, Rhea, and Io is going to be on night two, and Jane Gunther and Charlotte versus Tiffany will be on night one.
I feel like Jay and Gunther should probably lead, but
yes,
we'll see. Well, how are you guys now that we had the stuff that popped off in London?
Oh, it was fantastic.
I thought it was fantastic. I wasn't like crazy over Jay's promo on Monday, but is the heat back on this match?
Yeah, I mean, the blood segment helped so tremendously. Because I wasn't expecting it. I knew that, you know, they were ramping it up. I just wasn't expecting them to go to that level. I think it's also it's weird when I say weird if I say this, I guess, but forgive me for not really knowing what WWE's political stature is. But I didn't think a feud with Jay Gunther and Jimmy Uso would be getting blood. I would figure that, yeah, that's kind of safe for Cody. That's safe for the other people who are only the ones who are allowed to juice. But to doing it with that, I think is like, okay, you're gonna spread the wealth a little bit here. That's good. You don't have to do it every time, and that's why it's so effective. They don't do it every time. But I think that was an effective way to further things. Gunther's doing great work. He's just such an asshole. And I think Jay's gonna do it. And I think it's gonna be a great moment. So it'll be fun.
1,000%. We will go through the card next week. WrestleMania pre-show. Ruthless Aggression. Be on the lookout for it. I will be on the way to Las Vegas listening to it because it's a 5-hour flight from Philly, and I got to do something. Let's talk about technically it's WWE related, but also non-WWE related. AEW held their Dynasty pay-per-view this past weekend in Philadelphia. If you were wondering if I went, come on, man. Come on. White Lotus season finale was Sunday night, man. I had priorities. Priorities. And then also I saw that pay-per-view lasted until after midnight. No. No. You want me to leave Temple after? You want me to leave North Philly after midnight? Get the fuck out of here, Tony Khan.
No, it was very long, aggressively long. Because, you know, I watched White Lotus and then Gemstones, and last week tonight it was done by like 10:45, and I'm like, oh, that show has to be over. And I turned it on, and the main event was still going. I'm like, oh.
It's absolutely fucking. I think I saw that the Kenny match started at like 11:15 or something like that. What the fuck? What the fuck are we doing?
We have to do that.
There's no cause for that at all. No one is trying to be up past midnight when they have to go to work the next day.
Yeah, on a Saturday, like whatever, for like Double or Nothing or All Out, because those are holiday weekends, whatever. But yeah, I mean, like, come on, until midnight Eastern.
Absolutely negligent. Well, the people in the crowd in Philadelphia who wasted all their time and then had to wake up early the next morning, if they stayed, which is maddening, if they stayed, they got a little treat. After Swerve Strickland got kneed to death by the Young Bucks, because it makes sense, right? And he lost to Mox, the AEW World title match. He then got on the mic. He was the closer. He was the one sending everyone home. Goodbye. And before he left, he was like, oh, yeah, by the way, fuck Booker T. Because all of a sudden, the two of them are now in the feud. And who's the catalyst of it? None other than Vlad TV.
Yeah.
Because if you're two, because if you're two black wrestlers, the man who needs to be pushing your blood feud is fucking Vlad TV. First, let me say this. Swerve Strickland is a fucking clown. We knew that. We knew that already. But the fact that he chooses this medium, this person, who universally, anyone in a black community is like, yo, that person's not to be trusted. You cannot trust that person. That person uses black music, black culture, black experiences to further himself and make money. Now he is doing that same thing, but with black wrestlers. Black wrestlers who, for all intents and purposes, like, hey, no matter how you feel about Booker T, Booker T is a goddamn legend. Booker T is one of the first black wrestlers that any of us who grew up watching wrestling ever saw. Period. I'm sitting here looking up right now. Got a shirt for WrestleMania? 28 years ago, it's got Sherry, it's got Mean Gene, it's got Stevie Ray, it's got a WCW microphone, and it's got Booker T, all in cartoon character. Hulk Hogan, I am coming for you. That's a legend. For you to then go on this grifter show and speak ill on him is some fucking clown shit, considering the audience. But that's the audience that Swerve wants to get at. Because that's the audience that Swerve feels makes him money. That is clown shit. First and foremost. Secondly, what Booker said on his podcast, you're the one sending the people home.
Yeah.
After a pay-per-view that you main evented. But all anyone's talking about, they ain't talking about the match. They ain't talking about anything else on the card. They are talking about you saying, fuck Booker T, someone who's in the other company. The conversation is about you and a feud that you got with an old wrestler from another company, not yours, not the pay-per-view that you just made evented. Tell me that this man isn't a fucking clown. Tell me that he is a fucking airhead. It's like, as a fan, it's maddening. As a black fan, it sends me over the fucking roof because Swerve talks all this shit. All of this stuff about black wrestling. About how he's separate in a new generation. No, you are not. You are falling in line with every other fucking clown that has been in this industry before. It is sad. It is sad. And I'm sorry, I don't think he ever changes. I think this is his audience. You know what type of audience I'm saying. I can't say it because, you know, I can't jeopardize my job, my peace of mind. But you know good and goddamn well the people that he is trying to attract with that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
bothers
the fuck out of me. Go ahead.
Well, no, the big thing, I just, again, it's, and before Booker even said it, it's like, that's such a weird time to do it because it is going to be all anyone talking about from your show. And, you know, maybe it's for the best to deflect from the main event, which everyone hated. I mean, but they're still talking about that too. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, the thing is, I understand Swerve feels that he was misused or mistreated in WWE. But, like, you've been in AEW for, like, 3 years now, man. You're the champion. Like,
why are you still talking about your old bitch?
Yeah, like, you know, Triple H tried to get him back, and they were tampering with him, and he told Tony Khan, which, you know, cool, man.
Really snitch moves. Messing with your money.
Yeah. So, like, I don't know. Yeah, and I get some of the complaints about Booker, I guess, like, in light of recent events and, you know, some of the people he's been training with, like, sure. But that wasn't what this was about in the first place. Like, the Vlad TV thing was what, because Booker said Swerve shouldn't go on there and that he turned it down, and then Vlad TV guy was like, oh, actually, he didn't turn it down, which if you read the exchange, he kind of left it ambiguous.
Yeah.
And then, yeah, a couple days after that, everyone found the, you know, Booker chase and rant thing, which, don't get me wrong, is bad. it's obviously bad that, you know, Booker's hanging out with those sorts of people. But I don't know that the people mad about it are mad about it for the correct reasons other than Booker T works for WWE. And the other thing that Booker said on his podcast was, you know, I thought this was done. We kind of talked about it face to face. And then, you know, to do that when I'm 2,000 miles away, yeah, that's kind of shitty. So, like, and he's right there. He's absolutely right. So I think it did more harm than good for most people that, you know, aren't already have their mind made up about AEW and if they're going to watch it or not. You know, I don't think you're going to win any new people over that way. Yeah, I don't know, man. That's just, and it is unfortunate to, yeah, see, you know, a black wrestler not look up to another black wrestler. And I don't feel super qualified to speak on that. I'm not going to lie. But, like, it, you know, Booker T was a trendsetter and did a lot for the industry, you know, not just as a black wrestler. He was, you know, the first WCW guy to jump and, you know, make an impact in WWE. Like, that's a thing, too. So, like, he's made contributions, and I'm not saying you have to, you know, give him unfettering respect or whatever, but, like, you know, it just, you're making issues when I don't think you need to.
For me, it's not even the he has to look up to and revere Booker. I mean, no one, you ain't gotta look up to anybody on this earth, in or anybody in life. No one's asking you of that. What you do have to do is pay respect. That's a bare minimum ask, is that you pay respects to the people who came before you and laid a path for you. And, you know, if you're not gonna do that, then the last thing that you need to do is start shit and create a beef that no one ever cares to fucking have. I want you to close your eyes and I want you to picture the person or people who would benefit or would enjoy seeing Swerve Strickland shoot on Booker T. I want you to close your eyes and I want you to do that.
Yeah.
Tell me the person that comes to your mind.
Yeah, I mean, exactly.
They don't look like me.
No. It's someone who, you know, probably is in the AEW crowd. Again, I'm not, it's, you know, it's white people. Like, I...
Not even the Vatos want to see that shit, bro.
No. Like, so I don't get it. I don't get going out of your way to do that, you know. And it kind of felt a little bit like coping after, you know, that main event. And then there was so much on the line, it felt like for him. There really wasn't, but everyone kind of drummed up that there was a lot on the line.
Yeah.
And, you know, he lost and stayed down for 30 seconds or whatever after the Young Bucks hit their stupid-ass knee and then Mox finally pinned him. So, you know, sounds familiar, to be honest with you. Staying down way too long and then finally getting pinned when you shouldn't.
Yeah, that was especially after that happened. Like, you can't really say anything, bro. If your issue is that Vince McMahon said, "What up, my nigga?" If that's your issue, sit the fuck down, man. No one cares about your issue. I mean, there are people that care, but there's no one whose opinion I actually care about. Frankly. Anyway, let's get off the clown. Before we go back to WrestleMania 25, I do want to give love and respect to Nick Gage. He lost his longtime partner and wife, Sandra Culberson. They laid her to rest today in South Jersey. GCW came out with a post about an hour ago. Sandra was a passionate and fierce member of the MDK gang and a loud and proud face in the crowd from day one at GCW, CZW. She's a part of the family and she will be remembered and forever missed. So, love and prayers to Nick Gage. That man has been through a whole hell of a lot in such a short time on this earth. And I hope that he finds peace and love within the people that are around him during this time, because it's an awful thing to go through. All right, let's go back to 2025. Get me away from 2025. This year sucks. Let's go back to 2009. Another sucky year for different reasons, but hey, at least we had a black president. Are we skipping straight to WrestleMania?
We got a couple news things to do, and then yeah, right to WrestleMania.
Oh, wait, who started opening day for the Cubs? Let me fuck his name's on the tip of my tongue. I just can't pick it. It wasn't Ryan Dempster. It was the one guy. Fuck.
Was it Vin Bruno? Was that the Hayward year?
No, that was 2010. 2010 was like.
Fuck. It's going to kill me because his name's on the tip of my tongue.
Hold on. It wasn't Ted Lilly. It was. Hold on.
It's going to kill me.
Oh, it was Vin Bruno.
Oh, okay. Yeah. It was Vin Bruno.
Ted Lilly for the home opener.
I thought it was Randy Wells for some reason.
Oh yeah, no, he debuted shortly into the year because he made his debut in Milwaukee because I was there.
I feel like he definitely started an opening day for no reason, but I can't remember why.
Because they didn't have any pitchers for a while.
This was a bad time. This was a very bad time. Luckily, there's not a lot of bad times left. Oh yeah, by the way, Kevin Gregg's on the team for some fucking reason. God. If you ever want to piss a Cub fan off and be like, name a random reliever, watch it be Kevin Gregg and watch me lose my fucking mind. Anyway, let's go back.
Alright, top 10 movies for March of 2009. Number 10, Duplicity. Number 9, Slumdog Millionaire Sticking Around. Number 8, Madea Goes to Jail. Number 7, Last House on the Left. Number 6, Taken. Number 5, I Love You Man. Number 4, Knowing. Number 3, Race to Witch Mountain, starring Dwayne The Rock Johnson. Number 2, Monsters vs. Aliens, and number 1, Watchmen.
Watchmen was huge. Really good movie. I think the TV show was more interesting.
The TV show was awesome.
Great.
All of the songs to reach the top 5 in March. Right Round got to number 1. It was the only song to get to number 1.
Yeah, it's crazy because like, this is what, March, April? Right Round is going to get even bigger in the summer when it closes out the Hangover.
Yep.
God damn, that was a great. I'll pause and say this. You will never hear me say a bad word about Flo Rida. I worked security at a show at Toyota Park. This was, remember, the B96 Summer Jams. I worked security for the B96 Summer Jam 2012. And Flo Rida, he should have been the closer, but The Wanted was the closer. Rest in peace to the dude from The Wanted. But Flo Rida is probably one of the best performers in music that I have ever seen. He puts on a freaking show. He is good. And I'm not even a big fan of his music. Great performer. And you see why WWE kept calling him back.
Mm-hmm. Dead and Gone got up to number 2. Heartless and Poker Face got to number 3. Kiss Me Through the Phone and Gives You Hell got to number 4. And Crack a Bottle and My Life Would Suck Without You got to number 5.
Crack.
It's unfortunate that the All-American Rejects were band that I knew first from MVP Baseball.
Yes.
Then I liked the Move Along album or whatever, and then I just hated Gives You Hell.
Yeah. This is their sellout album. You know, like this is the album where it's like, oh yeah, we're making a shit ton of money. We're going to go ahead and make the, we're going to sell out our original fan base. It don't sound nothing like Swing Swing. It don't sound nothing like Move Along. Even Move Along, you can probably say it's the start of that, you know, because Move Along is even kind of a mid record that got popular. But yeah, once they started doing Give You Hell, no, it's mid.
March 9th, Katharney was released. So really good news.
Who gave a fuck about Katharney?
March 14th, Andrew Tess Martin died at the age of 33. Really the last, Umaga is the last one.
But yeah.
The last big, before guys started going to the WWE rehab and stuff. And it was sad. I mean, I remember I wasn't really watching, but I heard about Tess, and it was like, wow, that's crazy. And then, you know, you look now, he's 33, which is, you know, the age.
I'm 33.
I mean, so it's like, it's crazy to think about,
You think about it, and he was like so young in the Triple H and Stephanie stuff. Like he really was a baby, but he was a fine blue chipper. You know, he just wasn't interesting, and it sucks. Like, yeah, shocked that you haven't got a Dark Side of the Ring on him yet.
Yeah,
the way that dudes like Vader and Bam Bam. I watched the Bam Bam one last night. That's a heartbreaker. So I'm sure, you know, the story of Test is sad too, but
March 28th, John Cena was a presenter at the Kids' Choice Awards, hosted by Dwayne Johnson.
Ooh.
That's funny,
yeah. Ooh. Now look at us, full
circle. And The Rock is apparently still involved in this feud between John Cena and Cody.
Yeah, you know, they name-dropped him, at least, just to remind you. It's not a folk part of it, though.
Well, next weekend.
If that dude can't take a charter flight from LAX to Harry Reid,
yeah.
I don't understand it.
All right. WrestleMania 25, April 5th, 2009, Reliant Stadium, Houston, Texas, in the shadows of the Astrodome. Chris, you were there.
I was. This is my first WrestleMania.
So question, how did you come to go to this WrestleMania? Was this something that you asked for? Was this a family trip that was planned? What's the story of you, you know, going to your first WrestleMania?
So, okay. So it actually started 5 years before, the day of Mania 20. That was at Madison Square Garden. I lived in New Jersey. I had been back and forth. By then, that would have been my first show in a couple years, because I used to go to shows, but not really like the pyro, so I'd end up leaving early before anything interesting happened. Although I did one time when I was like 5 or 6 do an asshole chant to a certain somebody, which I feel justified in doing now. But so it was there, and I just randomly decided to go on Ticketmaster, and I saw tickets there, and I'm like, hey, can we go? And they were like, my parents said no, so I was like, okay, whatever. Watched it on pay-per-view, it was still effective. But then that happened, and I was just like, you know what? Can we do this? And my parents were like, yeah, let's make it happen. And then we got in on the sale. We got tickets on the initial sale, so we were fortunate enough to do that, because I was back before bots happened with Ticketmaster, but it was more random draw than anything back then. And then we just planned out the trip, went down to Houston, had a good time.
Houston, though, not, you know, Chicago.
Yeah, I know, but I guess it was just how things were. LA, yeah, LA would have been a hike. 06, yeah, those it became more feasible then than it did before then.
Yeah, and did you go to Access?
So I went to the Hall of Fame. I think my first Access was actually at 29. So I didn't go to Access at 25 because we were just interested in just doing the Hall of Fame first and then Mania. It was a really good Hall of Fame class. Yeah. It was a really good Hall of Fame class. It was enjoyable. I enjoyed the city. I really forgot where we stayed. We weren't too far because, and I know that because I went to Raw the following night. I didn't see the whole show because we had to get up early to fly the next day. We didn't feel like going for the whole thing. But we walked. We walked from our hotel to the Toyota Center. We passed by Minute Maid Park, which was really cool. We were in that area, so it wasn't that bad. It wasn't that bad. We were able to get there, had a good time.
That's wonderful, man. Cool. Yeah, it's cool to see to get your first WrestleMania in as a you know, still technically a child, you know, and still be able to enjoy it, you know, that young, rather than like, oh, it becomes the chore that it is now as an adult, you know, monetary wise and all that stuff, to just, you know, enjoy it as a fan. And really not, you probably didn't give a shit about how mid it was. You're just probably happy to be there.
No, you know? Yeah.
You're not like me at 34 falling asleep and like, I know they didn't waste my fucking time like this.
Yeah, this one's 4 or 5 for you.
This is 5, 34, 35, 38, 40, 41. This is number 5. If you would have told me a decade ago that I'd be on my 5th WrestleMania, I would be giddy probably. It was always one of the things, and honestly, when you watch this and I see the promo for Arizona, like the feelings keep rushing back. Cause I remember seeing that and be like, okay, I got to get to Arizona for WrestleMania. How can I, you know, coerce family to get me out to Arizona so I can go to WrestleMania, and knowing good and goddamn well that was never going to happen. And then for just years after that, it just becomes a, like, I got to get to WrestleMania one day, like next year is the year, I got to get to WrestleMania. And so now for it to just be like a yearly thing, like, you know, I kind of, you know, set it within the calendar, try to, you know, keep some money aside, like, hey, you know, find some hotel money, you know, make a whole thing of it. And now, you know, having a partner that I exposed to WrestleMania last year. Like, Philly was a special case. I just happened to, you know, be living in Philly, and they decided to go to Philly. Crazy, right? Vegas, obviously, I lived in Vegas for a little over 2 years. That's a city I know very well, and I'm also, like, very happy to go back. But, yeah, you know, for it to be, like, a yearly thing now for me, it's, you know, I say it's a blessing, but then also it's a curse because, God, you know, WrestleMania back then, it's definitely not as expensive as it is now. That was why I was looking at a I think it's a screen grab because, you know, they've been putting up, like, the hidden footage from like different, you know, accesses and WrestleMania trips, and I think they put up some hidden footage from 19 in Seattle, and the upper deck prices being, you know, under $100, in some cases under 70, it's wild to me. Yeah. Those tickets are going for 200 plus the bad seats, you know. So
does. Even better,
yeah, I will say this, like, now that I go to WrestleMania every year, I can't go to regular Raw and SmackDowns and pay a fine.
I feel that.
Yeah.
It doesn't fulfill me.
Yeah, it's not worth going to Raw or SmackDown anymore.
Well, because I feel like I even said that like in the 2010s to
you. Yeah, you always said house shows and pay-per-views.
House shows and pay-per-views, because you never TV is, and back then TV was especially random. TV was so random, you have no idea if it's going to be a good or a bad show. And if it's not, you can't change the channel.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I used to be the one that didn't want to go to the house shows, and it was only TV. And I guess now I'm like, okay, well, I would much rather choose a random house. Like, I went to the house show at a United Center a couple years ago. You know, Bray Wyatt hadn't been seen in months, and Bray made an appearance, you know, before he switched to being the Fiend or whatever. You know, I got to see a cage match with Seth Rollins and Dean Ambrose. You know, like, you kind of got to learn, like, how to pick your poisons, right? Like, I did a Raw last year. I did a SmackDown in 2023, but, like, I didn't pay for that Raw last year. That was because they fucked up my girl's seating at WrestleMania, so they gave us a comp, you know? Like, it's not worth it to me. And now that we're in the era of, you know, the big pay-per-views, like, I would pretty much only do the big shows at this point. If it's a SummerSlam, if it's a Rumble, if it's a WrestleMania, if it's a Money in the Bank, or, you know, Survivor Series, if the main event is worth going to, yeah, I would do it. But Raw, SmackDown, I wouldn't waste my time on it.
All right, so we did a pretty cool intro video of the history of WrestleMania, past 24 years at that point.
Yeah, do you want to touch on what happened in the pre-show?
Yes, actually, we should.
Yeah.
I don't even remember what happened on the pre-show. So I know there was a battle royal, because there obviously always is one.
No,
the pre-show, not this year.
Oh, wow.
Yeah, the tag team titles were unified. So what happens here is the Colognes unified the tag team titles. I believe they faced Miz and Morrison.
Yeah, sounds about right.
So, okay, so it wasn't a lumberjack. So everyone out there, so they unified the tag belts on April 5th, 2009, and on August 16th, 2010, they are ununified. From there, the teams that hold the titles are the Colognes, Edge and Chris Jericho, Jericho, D-Generation X, Show Miz, and the Hart Dynasty. So the really disappointing thing is that they consider the history of unified tag team championships to be the tag team championships that Stephanie McMahon debuted in 2002 on SmackDown. So they have that lineage. It's really tough to see how this all happened. You could, for a while, it was part of the big selling point of the show, the tag team wrestling between the SmackDown 6 and even Eddie Guerrero, the teams of Eddie Guerrero and Tajiri, Billy Kidman, and Rey Mysterio. You know, the Dudleys were in 2004. You had Eminem and London and Kendrick with their both of their long and historic reigns, even if their opponents always weren't up to snuff. It feels like the cratering of SmackDown really helped to crater the tag team titles, because if one thing was certain on Raw, the tag team titles were nothing.
Yeah.
The tag team titles were barely anything ever on Raw. I feel like the only times that they ever really mattered I mean, the Kane and Big Show had that tag team title match against Carlito and Chris Masters. The result was never in doubt. They didn't really build to anything there. They had Kane and Murdoch, but I think they missed the boat on them more than once. La Resistance never took off. Booker and Van Dam was too quick and too abbreviated. I think that could have actually done pretty well in 2004, at least. He did get hurt. Well, no, he got moved to SmackDown. He got moved to SmackDown and then and kept working. Yeah, he got hurt when he was teaming with Ray. Tag team wrestling is just... It's lower than it's ever been in this company at this point. And anyone who's talking about things as they are right now, trust me, it was a lot worse then, and it was even more helpless than you think. Yeah, because it never really picks back up.
So New Day is like really picks because like Shield and Wyatt have their thing, but that's mostly trios.
And I mean the Usos and Harper and Rowan had that great match at Battleground 2014, the 2 out of 3 falls match. But it never really picks up.
Yeah,
it takes a and even when they did pick up. Picking up with the stupid pennies, the stupid dimes,
yeah,
those awful, ugly titles, like, please,
yeah, the tag belts are unified now.
They are.
So yeah, we get a really cool intro video about the history of WrestleMania. It's kind of the featured players on the card go over their favorite moments. Big Show mentions he was rooting for Andre at WrestleMania 3, which I would hope so. That's his dad. So, come on, man. Nicole Scherzinger does America the Beautiful. We are underway with. An 8-man Money in the Bank ladder match.
Just want to say, seeing the WrestleMania pyro was awesome. And I say that as somebody who was, again, I was so afraid of the pyro and the noise, I used to not go to full shows. By then, I had already experienced enough Batista machine gun pyros to last me a lifetime, so I was ready for this.
Yeah,
I was prepared for whatever it brought out, and it was a big show. The stadium environment certainly helps. I'll say that.
Mm-hmm. I'll say this to your point about the pyro. That was, in all honesty, the only thing that I wanted to do on my first WrestleMania. I was so geeked to be there when the pyro went off for my first WrestleMania. I probably told this story because, I mean, the year we started the pod was the year I went to 34 in New Orleans. And, you know, I had my sign. We're rooting for everybody black. Everyone outside of the Superdome loved it. We're snapping pictures and everything. It was such a wonderful, fun time. There was somebody in that stadium inside of the Superdome who did not like the sign. You can guess who that person probably is. They went and told security. The next thing I know, I have a black security guard trying to snatch my sign out of my hand and then pull me aside. And three security guards, all of them brothers, then threatened to remove me from the stadium. My first WrestleMania. This is within like 5 or 10 minutes before the beginning of the show. And I am beside myself. Because I'm worried that I won't be there. I paid all this money for WrestleMania. I get kicked out and I don't even get to see the pyro. I was incredibly sad. Eventually, they realized that their mission was fucking fruitless. Because obviously, went back to my seat right as the opening video was playing. Got to see my fireworks, and it meant the world that I got to see my fireworks. So, Chris, I get you. That's the one thing about the show, about WrestleMania, that really puts the gravity of the event in full focus. You know, it's like you're here. You're at the pinnacle of wrestling viewing right here. Whether it's going to be a good show or not. It's the spectacle of that right there that makes it. And I wish they did that more. You know, I was watching 40 earlier today. And, you know, they kick 40 off. And it's just, you know, pan to the crowd at the link. Hey, That's not fun. That's not it for me.
It's funny that you brought that up. Do we have to do a cold open every time?
Yeah.
You don't have to do that every time. Because you know what? Part of the reason that I think that, you know, people thought away about TV. They did away with the freaking Raw intro videos for years. No, you don't.
we gotta see them with the suitcase getting to the stadium.
Yeah, when you watch the NBA or whatever.
Yeah, I know that, but you see, I understand that, but like, it's not really the same thing. The show is always energized by an intro video. You get people excited with an intro video. You don't. Whatever. Rant over.
Yeah, Punk versus Kane versus Mark Henry versus MVP versus Finley versus Shelton, Kofi, and Christian. So pretty solid field for Money in the Bank.
Yeah.
Crowd is very happy to see Christian. He'd just been back for a couple months at this point.
Yeah, because he came back and he interrupted Jack Swagger in ECW. He showed up before No Way Out, which we discussed, and it was weird that he didn't show up on the pay-per-view, but he wasn't there. And I think that, you know, whether you thought away about him or not, there was always going to be that instant want and support for Christian in the spot.
Yeah.
They did not, that crowd did not forget how they felt 4 years ago about him, and his run in TNA only confirmed to them their belief that he could hang with the top dogs in the company.
I remember thinking it was a shoo-in that Christian was going to win this match.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, Vince just never liked him.
Nope.
All right, so some of the highlights from this match. We have a point where all six guys are on the ladder, and then Kane and Mark Henry push them all over. A little bit later, Kane, Christian, MVP are outside, and Punk and Kofi do stereo suicide dives on them.
Yeah, and that was preceded by a few other dives before that, and then Shelton Benjamin
does one off the top of the ladder outside.
It's like he tries a swanton, but the thing is, when you jump off the top of a really high ladder, you're not going to get the same kind of angle. So he comes down, and he looks like he's doing just like an Olympic dive. You're not supposed to do that. So he came crashing down pretty awkwardly. Punk was able to catch him. If you watch, he's able to cradle his head. It's a good heads-up play by him. But yeah, that didn't go great for Shelton.
And honestly, you would never know it. If you weren't closely paying attention, you would never know that, you know, he didn't get the rotation that he wanted. It's a great spot. It really is a great spot. It's one of Shelton's best. And it's crazy because Shelton has a lot of great spots in this particular match at WrestleMania. And he, you know, just does it again.
This was also during MVP's losing streak gimmick.
We all know
that losing streaks are the way to go to get people over. Just look at Shelton. Oh.
Yeah. You see, the thing is, like, they mentioned it, and I'm like, before they mentioned it, I'm like, yeah, I saw him coming out, and, like, you know, he was happy with the crowd and all that shit. I'm like, damn, man, remember when he was losing all the time? Remember he lost in front of Sherry Shepherd? And then they mentioned that, and I was like, oh, yeah, no. Oh, that's sad.
Mark Henry looks like he's going to go jump on all the guys outside, but Finley hits him with a shillelagh, and then Hornswoggle gets a little ladder and climbs up on top of Mark Henry and jumps off him, and the frog splash the guys on the outside.
Great.
Christian does an unprettier off the ladder to see him.
He does. That looked, because it looked like Punk was going to try and GTS him off the bridge that he made with the ladder, yeah, but that didn't come to pass, obviously.
And then Shelton runs up a ladder from the outside against the ropes onto another ladder.
God.
And then onto the ladder MVP was on and tried to sunset flip powerbomb him, but
didn't work.
That part down.
But
and then Shelton responds by picking him up and just like powerbombing him into the barricade from the ring.
Well, he powerbombed him. There were three guys there, Atlas, Mark Henry, I think somebody else is out there too. I think Kane.
Yeah.
So it looked like basically what he was trying to do was a sunset flip powerbomb. Matt Hart to on MVP to try and get him outside onto those three guys, but he couldn't make that happen. So they all got up and they refocused and they did the right thing. So job well done.
Then there's two ladders, Christian and I believe Punk were at the top of one and
kicked
him off. And
yeah,
rode the one down into the ropes. Liv Morgan a couple of years ago.
Yeah, I totally forgot that happened, and that's the origin of that spot. From when Liv and Becky were fighting up at the top of the ladder at Money in the Bank, and Liv was pushed over, but she put her foot on the rope and then pushed herself back up. I did not realize that was an inspiration because I forgot about this match. So, well played.
At the end here, we got Punk and Kane at the top of the ladder. Punk pushes them off and wins his second straight Money in the Bank.
So some light jeers.
Yeah. People wanted Christian, I think. Which, sure.
I get it, but this is where I you know, I understand the crowds sometimes and their unruliness, but this is kind of where I break. Like, it's kind of just random. It's like, CM Punk, man.
Like, this is really, like, 23, Punk kind of won the Money in the Bank because of the Jeff stuff, and, like, they didn't really have a full fleshed-out plan.
Well, you won 20, well, you mean 24. You mean 24.
But this one, it's, like, kind of the start of his ascension.
Yes.
Straight Edge Society soon.
Yes. I mean, he's going to turn on... He's turning on Jeff, and he's doing the Jeff feud, which I think is his first launch into stardom.
Right next year, WrestleMania, which obviously is a big spot in Phoenix, one of the best matches of the night.
Yes.
So yeah, big moment for Punk, and really the start of something big for him.
It is. It is the start of something.
For sure. I wish the Money in the Bank ladder matches were on WrestleMania again. I know the event's become, you know, a big thing now. I could do without it, but... It's been one of their stadium events, so whatever, they're not going to change it, but it feels like a really easy way to get guys on the card at WrestleMania, and...
But I think that... I think, to be fair, they don't really have that much of an issue with that right now. If I'm going to be honest, I think the issue for me with current day, if I'm going to say that, you know, people aren't getting opportunity, I think, you know, there's more blocking than ever, in my opinion. That's... There's a lot of acts that are around that I feel like... I'm not saying whatever, but you get what I'm trying to get at. Right. They've been able to find ways. I mean, they have the multi-man IC title match. They had a 12-man ladder match last year. My God.
CM Punk is the Money in the Bank briefcase holder.
And then for some reason we get a Kid Rock concert. Not just a song. A concert. It is a full set. It is a set. And the thing is, I had no interest in this. I got up and I went and got food. That was their friggin' Backlash 2008 theme song. I don't know. He did. I feel it's like if you're gonna do this, yeah. I think wrestling fans, you know, they like Kid Rock's music or whatever. Like, no one wants to see a concert at a show. And if you look at it, if you watch, like, nobody's excited. No, they tried to find people on the crowd. No one's excited. No one's there. No one wanted to see this. No one wants to see a concert.
That was the thing then, about... Go ahead. Sorry, finish.
Well, no, actually, I was going to talk about the match next. But yeah.
Oh, so that was a problem of the Vince McMahon era. Vince would bring in musicians that the crowd genuinely never cared for.
No.
And continuously calling Kid Rock, and I think Kid Rock has a Hall of Fame credit, doesn't he?
Does.
Gross. Yeah. What did Kid Rock ever do to deserve a Hall of Fame credit? Besides license a song for The Undertaker to use. That isn't even the better of the two songs that he was licensed to use. Where's Fred Durst? In his Hall of Fame induction, he deserves it more than Kid Rock, I would say. Especially because he gave you not one, but two WrestleMania bangers.
Yep.
Come on. Anyway, I fast-forwarded through this.
Yeah, there's a Miss WrestleMania Battle Royal that Santino won, so, you know, that's... Not really a good use of anyone's time.
That whole thing was just so reflective of how they felt about women at the time.
Yes.
None of the women got full entrances. They were all part of Kid Rock
concert.
They all came out. You didn't even know who was in the match until they were referenced when they were eliminated, and they didn't even show everybody getting eliminated. For instance, did you know Sonny was in this match?
I did know Sonny was in this match.
Sonny was in this match. She got eliminated. That's the only time they ever heard her name in the match. She was there. So was Victoria, who hadn't been around in a long time. Joy Giovanni. Joy Giovanni was in this match.
That's wild.
Joy Giovanni was in this match. So.
Talk about cuppy coffee. That's Joy Giovanni.
Yeah. So, again, it's... Yes. Yes, she did. They had a bunch of people come back that hadn't been around in months. But that's... And that's how they were... And that's how they were treated.
I do think that I do agree with you, Chris, in that it's indicative of how they felt about women's wrestling, the women that they had in the division. that they were a side piece for a Kid Rock concert, and the one match that they had at WrestleMania was won by a man wearing drag. It's probably the most disrespectful act, which is crazy to think about with all of the disrespectful acts that they've had women endure, but it's one of, if not the most disrespectful act involving the women that WWE has ever done.
I would agree.
Yeah. Okay, so after all that, it's time for Chris Jericho. And
who knew this would be so good?
The next thing of Johnny Piper, Jimmy Snuka, and Ricky Steamboat. And how we got there was
so funny.
Mickey Rourke thought that he was in danger because Jericho was so good at, drumming up the match. So Mickey Rourke didn't want to wrestle him and came with Frank Shamrock to WrestleMania in case he needed backup. And then Vince said if anything happened, then he could take on Frank Shamrock.
He really did refer to him as the midget, which is really funny considering current events. Hey, guys, what do you think Mickey Rourke would say about Santino Marella?
He should not be. He really shouldn't be even like Big Brother in general. I didn't realize he was like 72, so he should probably just not be in public life. Because he is.
Why is he ever interacting with the JoJo Siwa?
Yeah,
I never thought I would be on JoJo Siwa's side of something.
You don't know about that, do you? You didn't hear anything about that. Mickey Rourke was asking her about her sexuality and stuff. I believe he said, "You won't be gay anymore if I'm here for longer than 4 days or whatever."
Because you want to have sex with JoJo Siwa. That's what you want to do.
Yeah, and so like they kept talking about like she's like, "Oh, my partner's non-binary," and Mickey Rourke was not a fan of that. And I think he's still on the show, but he got like in trouble on the show. I don't know.
He's still on the show apparently. Oh, he also oogled one of the hosts.
Yeah.
Like eyed her down, like, very, very sexually.
Chris Jericho is not wrestling Mickey Rourke. He's wrestling Roddy Piper, Jimmy Snuka, and Ricky Steamboat, which the thing is that Vince made it up is it had to be three Hall of Famers who were on WrestleMania 1.
They never said this on TV, but it's something that he...
Well, Chris Jericho was trying to pick people because, you're not going to do anything with Piper and Snuka. You need someone who can actually do something in there. And so Jericho was like, "Oh, what about Lawler?" Vince like, "Oh, he wasn't on WrestleMania 1. And only the thing that Vince cared about and made up. So they ended up with Steamboat because, like, he was retired, but he was still
in good enough shape.
Yeah, he was around and stuff, but I mean, and yeah, it ends up being a really fun match. I mean,
Steamboat,
who hadn't actually had a real match since 1994, it worked out, man. It was great, and he'll have a few more matches later this year. He'll have one on the Raw after WrestleMania, and then he has a few with Drew McIntyre at house shows, which is pretty cool.
Yeah.
But yeah, this match, you might be thinking like, oh, Chris Jericho came back and was right around the title. He should have probably had something bigger, but I think the original plan was like, this is going to be Mickey Rourke. Chris can get him through this match. And
yes.
And sell a good promo.
Yeah, because they sent him to the SAG Awards. That's where this started. Again, the wrestler was a big friggin' deal. But, and it looked like it was going to be that, and then they weaned off of it because they referred to something that happened to Eddie Murphy, I think the word was or whatever, and they were like, don't do this because they're not going to give you the award.
It's the same advice that The Rock got, don't be around wrestling if you want to be an actor.
Yeah.
It's kind of the thing for a while, which is funny to think about now.
Very
funny. But yeah, this match is fun. It's a good time. Steamboat looks good. The other two, people are happy to see them.
Don't look good.
No, not really at all, but Jericho obviously gets the win, and then you get the big post-match confrontation with Mickey Rourke, and it was a good time. I liked it. Did you like it in the building?
Yeah, I thought it came out well in the building. I think everyone loved Jericho at that point, so he was over as a bad guy. People,
always
pop for Piper. They definitely pop for Steamboat, pop for Flair.
I'm sure changed with Jericho, huh?
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it sure does.
But I mean,
it's so weird. But
again, like
Jericho at the top of the game, I think.
Yeah.
08 was his masterful year. He's about to have, we're going to talk about the title one later. He's about to have one of the best Intercontinental title matches of the decade.
Yes.
Nash against Rey Mysterio.
Yep.
So, again, he's on.
Yeah. Okay. So, after Chris Jericho and the Legends, we get Matt Hardy against Jeff Hardy. And the turn that this dude took was that Matt was the one that burned down Jeff's house.
Yes.
You might be asking yourself, why did he still help him win the title if he burned down his house? Well, it was all part of the plan.
You've seen that. He's intimating that he burned his house, he killed his dog, he ran him and his girlfriend off the road, and also set up fireworks to blow him up in the face.
Yeah.
Do all that, dude.
And
what the fuck?
Obviously, this match is bad. It's famously bad. I think there's many problems. One of them is that Matt, as a singles worker, was basically only good during the version one stuff, which had been 6 years before that at this point.
Yeah.
And then they give him the Extreme Rules stipulation, which will go on to hurt Triple H and Randy because they can't do anything, you know, that they want to do. I mean, they still try, but like that match is bad too, which we'll get into. But like, it got a lot of buzz around last year because of the Uso match, which was bad in a different way than this. But like, yeah, this is bad. Like, no one really wants to see it. It doesn't have any juice like you'd want. And like, I don't even know if it was a situation. Like, at least the Usos wanted to wrestle each other. I don't think Matt and Jeff did.
It's not even just that. It's also, what does the crowd want to see? 10 years earlier, almost, over 10 years earlier, they did the same mistake with the Steiners.
Yeah.
Nobody wanted to see them wrestle, but they broke them up.
Mm-hmm.
Nobody wanted to see the Hardys wrestle. They already kind of tried that in 2001 and 2002.
Yeah.
Where they're angsty with each other, and, you know, Lita's kissing Jeff, and, you know, they're teasing all this stuff, and again, it just doesn't work. Then they separated them. They put them back together again anyway in the late 2000s. Same thing with the Dudleys.
Mm-hmm. So what you're saying is, if you have a highly successful tag team, potentially brothers, but it doesn't have to exclusively be brothers. You have a highly successful tag team that the fans love. They're great together. They never want to see them break up. That you should never ever have them break up and wrestle at a WrestleMania. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah.
Well, that's it. I guess WWE will never ever repeat that mistake ever again. Yeet.
It's really unfortunate because, again, like, Brett Nolan is, like, it's not the standard. It's yep.
Yeah.
Yeah, but they were tag team partners. Like, Brett, you know, was with Jimmy Anvil when he was in the tag team, and then he, you know, succeeded on his own. Owen was always on his own. They never put him together with Brett until the year before when they wanted to give Owen some juice. You know, so you got that. It was little brother trying to get his comeuppance on big brother. Rather than older brothers jealous of younger brother getting his shine, which they've now done twice into bad results. This is a shitty match. No one cared.
Yeah, and it's a shame. I mean,
it is a shame.
Because
this also goes into the conversation about tag teams.
Yeah.
Now, when they're broken down,
that's valuable.
Mm-hmm.
That's very valuable.
Yeah.
If you see value in that, you can keep going with it. But you didn't.
Yeah.
And really, Matt endlessly defending his brother and being in his corner when he's champion or whatever, being proud of him or whatever, that's more endearing than this.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know. So again, I don't know what they were trying to do other than Vince didn't like Matt and wanted him to make him look like an asshole.
Yeah.
Which he already accomplished 4 years prior in the Edge.
Exactly.
So, I don't know what you're looking for here other than just continuing to prove the same point.
Yes. Rey Mysterio and JBL are in action for the Intercontinental title.
Rey is the Joker, continuing his comic book character run through WrestleMania. Has not been there the past 2 years.
No.
He's the Joker, baby!
Yeah, so JBL kind of goes after him before the bell, and then they ring the bell, and Rey gets him.
You missed the pre-match promo that JBL cut on the people of Texas.
Oh, yeah.
Where he, like, implied they were broke, potentially homosexual. Just not up to his level. It was kind of off. It was a little off-putting.
Yeah, a little bit.
Towing some lines there. seemed to be more masculine.
Yeah. So, eventually the bell does ring, and Bray gets him with a 619 and wins in 20 seconds and is the Intercontinental Champion.
He is. And then JBL quits.
Yeah. So JBL is done.
He's done. This is his last.
Think he'll be on commentary somewhere, maybe, or he'll be gone for a little bit and go through his business stuff. I don't actually know.
I know he does return to commentary eventually, but I think he's gone for a bit.
Yeah. So, kind of crazy that JBL's done, but that's where we're at. Speaking of Texans, it is time for perhaps the best WrestleMania match ever.
Yes.
The Undertaker and Shawn Michaels. And, you know, along the way leading to this match in the past couple of years, we've kind of danced around it, you know, both the Rumbles. They hadn't wrestled since...
They had not wrestled
since 1997.
Classic late 2000s WWE, just pretend like nothing ever happened.
Yeah, well, they did that with Triple H Undertaker Triple H Undertaker match.
They sure did. And again, it's just classic WWE.
Yeah.
They did it with that. They did it with Eddie and Ray at the SummerSlam 05. They could have talked about the WCW stuff where this rivalry
started. Invasion pay-per-view where they were.
There's so much uncovered ground. Of course, they didn't bother.
Yeah, this one's particularly weird, though, because it's one that they did in their company.
That's the thing. They did it all in their company. And they
even used the previous two Rumbles to help set this match up and help set the stadium.
Yeah.
Again, this is also the same company where, for the last few months, if you've been reading the dirt sheets, you've been seeing that Undertaker is slated to wrestle Vladimir Kozlov, not Shawn Michaels. Well, Shawn Michaels is going through a recession gimmick with JBL.
So that's
frustration because it makes it seem like that wasn't actually a thing. Which, knowing how things go, it probably wasn't.
Yeah, Kozlov, who was a lumberjack in the tag title match, by the way. But yeah, let's get into it. Shawn Michaels, wearing all white, descends from the heavens like a Righteous Gemstones character.
Yeah, leaning into the boring Greek Christian stuff.
Undertaker comes down from below the stage, heaven and hell, symbolism. And they just kind of get in there and just go right at it at first.
Yeah. They are just...
Again, just laying it in there.
Yep.
We get old school, Shawn does a figure four, Snake Eyes boot, leg drop for two. Shawn counters the chokeslam into a very bad crossface that he keeps on for 90 seconds.
It wasn't a good crossface.
Undertaker finally powers out with a sidewalk slam. Shawn goes up for the elbow, which he will look to do like six different times in this match. Undertaker sits up and catches him in a chokeslam, but Shawn gets out and goes for sweet chin music. Undertaker ducks, and Michaels goes for the figure four. Undertaker gets Hell's Gate. Shawn gets the ropes. That's our first big sequence.
That was an awesome sequence.
Yes.
That was so good. I think it was at that point I'm watching this and I'm just like, wow, we are going somewhere here.
Yeah. Undertaker goes for leg drop on the apron, but Shawn moves. Could not have felt good.
No.
Shawn goes for moonsault on the outside, but Taker moves.
Yep.
Okay.
So we must get this bump in this match.
The Undertaker is about to do a tope onto Shawn. So Shawn pushes the rep out of the way and pulls the cameraman into the way.
Deuce?
Yes. Deuce. And I don't know how Deuce or Undertaker didn't die there, to be honest with you. It looked like Deuce landed right on his head and Undertaker just didn't get caught at all.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It ain't even like he tried to catch that man.
No.
No.
It just...
Let me tell you where I was sitting. I was sitting on the side of the camera. Not the hard camera side. I was up, not the nosebleed. I was up.
Yeah.
Seeing all that top down. Shit. I thought something bad happened.
I mean, it looked like it. Shawn eventually gets up, and the ref gets up. Shawn asks the ref to count, and Undertaker.
Shawn's desperate at this point because he wants to beat the Undertaker, and he went through all that, so he's begging him to get the pin count.
Yep. Undertaker gets back in before 10, though.
And Shawn is just in despair.
Yeah. Shawn tunes up the band, goes for sweet chin music, but gets choke slam, kick out at 2.
Big choke slam.
Shawn finally hits the sweet chin music, kick out at 2. Last ride, kick out.
Yeah, because remember it was a last ride counter. And then Taker got frustrated.
Yeah.
hit him again. And that led to a kick out.
Sean, or Taker throws him over the top rope. Sean skins the cat, and as he's trying to flip himself back in, he gets caught in a tombstone, also for two.
That is one of the best near falls I've ever seen in my life. On TV, live, in person, doesn't matter.
No.
Just so good. And whoever thought of that, brilliant, because that was the move. No one kicked out of a tombstone. It's over. It's just not. And then you don't know what to think. Because, and I said this to you then, and it was true then. But by this point, people did think the streak could end.
Mm-hmm.
It wasn't until the Orton match that people wanted someone to beat the streak to benefit of. Since that didn't happen, and since he beat Batista, who could have, you know, arguably gained something to be champion, and it wasn't Edge, people thought it could be Michaels because he was already that kind of guy.
Yeah.
So the belief was really there.
Sean finally hits the elbow. Sweet chin music, another great near fall.
Yes.
Kick out there. Sean goes for the moonsault again. Undertaker catches him. Tombstone. It is done this time. Like I said, one of the best WrestleMania matches ever. I get it that a lot of people think, oh, you know, this is where like finisher spamming and near falls and stuff started. And like, you're not wrong necessarily, but it works. It works in this match. Like,
No Way Out 2001, watch The Rock face Kurt Angle, both throw the kitchen sink at each other, you can see where all this actually did start.
Yeah.
It did not start with this.
And I think it's a little bit ignorant to even say that this started a trend of, you know, the false finishes and all that stuff, because this match, more than so many others, is a match that deserves to show that the two performers in the ring want it so damn badly. You will take hit after hit after haymaker, and because you want to beat your opponent so badly, you will keep coming back and keep coming up. There's something to fight for. There's a slew of matches that go on nowadays that don't meet that qualification. Yet, kick out of the finisher, you know, false finish here, false finish there, one, two, three. Oh my god, this is awesome. No, it's not. You cannot recreate that. You can't recreate that emotion. It's impossible. That match has so many genuine feels. That's why it's so good. You can arguably say the rematch at 26 is better than 25 because there's a story to be told. But the fact that we still sit here and talk about the greatness of 25, it's because they went all out, because they went balls to the wall. And they had the cachet to do it.
Yeah, no, absolutely. And I mean, they delivered, and it's really an incredible match.
But apparently this isn't as good as Becky versus Ronda versus Charlotte at WrestleMania 35, apparently.
That list has been, it's mostly good, but yeah, there's some on there where it's just like, I don't know about
It's bad.
All right, so we move on. The first of the two major championship matches. Edge against John Cena against Big Show for the World Heavyweight Championship. It was going to be Edge against Big Show, but Cena got added because he exposed that Vicky was having an affair with Big Show or something. It's very dumb. Very dumb setup. I don't know why they needed to do a triple threat here, to be honest.
Edge has one note to his character right now, for whatever reason.
Yeah.
I just, in hindsight, this is one of those things that I just don't understand why people were so into this. He just always got good reactions, no matter how repetitive his character got.
Yeah. Yeah. No, it's fair.
It's almost like, I don't want to say whatever, but it's almost like he became an avatar for fans who were mad. The company wasn't doing, you know, salacious things anymore. He was the rated R superstar. So he became like every 18, 34 year old's like avatar.
Yeah.
Oh, the people with bass in their voices are always going behind you.
Yes.
Because you represent something that doesn't exist anymore. And after a while, like, even when you get it, when you see things like how things have played out with this nonsense with him, Vicky, and Big Show, you wonder why they held on to that for so long anyway.
Mm-hmm. All right, so Big Show comes out, Edge comes out, and then John Cena comes out with his old music. It's interesting.
Yeah, that was really, really weird. That at that point, because you know, at that point Cena was way past its peak, where people were just tired of him, and that happened. Okay.
Yes, and then he comes out, and there's probably 50 John Cena's on the ramp.
Yeah.
Pretty cool entrance.
Yes.
All wearing the hat and the AWA shirt that he had at that point.
Yeah, the AWA shirt was really cool.
So let's get into it. I really enjoyed this match.
It's not a bad match. I don't remember having a bad time watching it. I remember it not being like up the park. It's built
so. Cena goes to the top rope leg drop early on Big Show, and Big Show's going to be on the outside for a little bit. Chavo tries to get involved, gets an FU. Big Show gets tied up in the ropes like Andre would back in the day, which good spot there. Cena does the five moves of doom on Edge in front of Big Show, but then Vicky gets on the apron to distract Cena, which lets Edge get up, and Edge tries to spear Cena, but spears Vicky, and then Edge and Cena double clothesline each other. Big Show finally gets untied, goes for a double chokeslam, but Cena gets out, so he chokeslams Edge, but Cena gets out, goes for the FU, but he gets punched, and now everyone's back outside. Then we get back up in the ring, and Cena gets Edge in the STFU, but Big Show is able to break it up. Cena and Edge then use that time to get Big Show back out of the ring. We're back to one-on-one. Get a midair spear. Always something that people enjoy.
Yeah.
Cena tries to hit the FU on both of them, and I think... I couldn't tell if Edge slipped off or if they just realized immediately that it probably wasn't going to work.
Yeah, exactly.
So he hits it on Big Show, hits it on Edge. Edge rolls out. Cena pins Big Show, and he is the World Heavyweight Champion once again.
He is. And but I think that the one thing that does hurt this a little bit is that title has moved around so much.
Yeah.
The titles really have both moved around so much. They move shows. It is.
Yeah.
There is an argument that, like, okay, the meaning is starting to become a little bit ambiguous.
It's really been a weird time for Cena, too, the past couple years. Like,
yes, it has.
So, yeah, we'll see if he can bring some more stability. Prior to the main event, we honor the Hall of Famers. Bill Watts, Howard Finkel, Coco Beware, Ricky Steamboat, Harry and Dory Funk, the Von Erichs, and Stone Cold Steve Austin, who comes out in a suit and then leaves and then comes out in his shirt with the ATV and does the beer celebration. Good stuff. Had you'd seen Austin by then, right?
So, because now I'm trying to remember, because I don't think I ever made it to see the main event when I was at a house show.
Mm-hmm.
I'm trying to remember if he ever showed up. No, because he didn't show up in 2005, because he did at WrestleMania.
Yeah.
But he never did it in the summer. I saw Roddy Piper. He piped him on July 11th Raw with Shawn Michaels.
Oh yeah,
I had seen Hogan. I had seen Taker in 06. I didn't see many shows in 07 or 08. So no, this is actually the first time I ever saw Stone Cold.
No, see, there you go.
Technically it was like before Hall.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, no, this was a really good class.
It was, yeah.
It's really strong, most in all areas. And yeah, going back to the point about the world title and how many times it's changed, Edge won it in June of 2008. It changed hands 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6. The Cena win was the 7th title change since June. It's not exactly helped either because it's going to change again 2, 3, 4, 5, 6 more times this year.
No, that's excessive.
It's excessive. Excessive amount of title change.
Also, Mr. T was supposed to be in this class, but he did not want to go in because Pete Rose was in the WWE Hall of Fame, which he would eventually get over.
That's funny, though, to be honest with you. I think it is kind of funny.
He also got over eventually.
Yeah.
Fuck Pete Rose, but...
Right. It's such an interesting axe to grind, just because neither... I can understand if either of them, you know, crossed paths, but I don't believe that either would have crossed paths with Rose at either Mania. That's what I mean. Like, it was wrestling related, right? So it's just more interesting.
WrestleMania 26 is heading to Glendale, Arizona. Sure.
Yeah.
Big old toaster at a Super Bowl in 2008. Now it's getting a Mania in 2010.
Isn't that shocking it hasn't gone back?
I was gonna bring that up. Like, it's honestly surprising.
kind of sucks down there.
It does.
But I mean,
I know, but like,
damn, don't.
Do the Rumble at Chase Field again. People like that.
But also, like, you know, it's the daytime WrestleMania.
It's true. I don't think people like that stadium very much.
I don't
even for a football stadium, like, it kind of sucks.
Like, it's just like, okay, it's just still surviving.
Especially since now.
That's fair. All right. Triple H against Randy Orton for the WWE Championship is the main event of this program.
The build was really quite good.
The build was so good.
Triple H broke into Randy's house and tore up the place.
Broke into Randy's house. Legacy got over on all of them. And then they did the thing with Vince and Shane coming back to all fight against them.
Yeah.
Whatever you want to say, it was all well done.
All the motivations were all there.
Yeah. It was hot. It was hot as hell. It was such a blazing hot feud between two dudes who have a lot of history. This is a match that so many people were excited to see. And then they did the worst possible fucking thing that you could do to hamstring this match. And that is, you made it so that if Triple H got DQ'd or counted out, he will lose the championship. So guess what he's not going to do? He is not going to beat the living shit out of Randy Orton.
Yeah.
And it's like, you figure, okay, maybe that's bad. Like, it's not... They didn't ever establish that either. Like, they didn't have Orton egg him on. They didn't... They both went for their finishers in the first, like, 2 minutes of the match.
They didn't announce it until Lillian said it before the match, right? There was no, like, indication that that was a stipulation.
Yeah.
Still, like, it's just like, you know, you're going to probably go a bit long. I think Taker and Michael went long as it is, but, like, you think you're going to go long, like, they want to kill each other, let them kill each other.
Yeah, it's not even necessarily that it's, like, a bad match.
No,
it's perfectly fine. I mean, it doesn't meet the moment. And it doesn't meet the build, and it's disappointing, and I guess, like, Triple H winning is fine, like, he's a babyface, whatever, he needed to get one over on Orton, like, that's not as much of an issue, but, like, just doing it the way he did, it's boring. Like,
yeah, exactly.
It's long, and it's boring, and, like, it's not a fondly remembered, and I don't think the show itself is that bad, but a lot of people don't like it because, you know, the main event's bad. That's something that WrestleMania's run into sometimes. So, like,
I agree.
I don't know. Like, maybe if Michaels and Taker wasn't on this show, then this match wouldn't be as. I don't even know if that's true, though.
Because,
I mean, like,
if Michaels and Taker's not on this show,
then the show's just work.
Yeah, and then that match is just more
like,
available, because I think people were still on the high from Michaels Taker, even if they were disappointed by the ending.
Could Matt and Jeff have had, like, a regular match, and then this could have been Extreme Rules, I guess?
They probably could have had a regular match. If
their match was bad anyway.
If, like, they wanted to make it a series match or whatever, then sure, like, they could have. Jeff wasn't winning the title for another 3 months.
Yeah, and I mean, it needed a stipulation. If you don't want to do a no DQ match in the main event, then let Undertaker and Shawn main event. Who cares?
But that's so... That part doesn't even make any sense. They did a no disqualifications main event of the most famous Mania of all time. Of the most famous Mania match of all time.
Yeah.
Austin Rock 2. That was no disqualification. So that's not even nice.
No.
At 20, that was a no disqualification.
Yeah, inherently.
Inherently, all multi-man matches are no disqualification. Triple H and Batista had juice in 2005. The referee just let it slide. I mean, it's... There's so many exceptions they could have just used, and they just didn't do it.
But I guess, like, this is the first PG WrestleMania, too. I don't know if that plays a part of it. Where, like,
set it up the way that you did.
Yeah, exactly.
Putting his hands on Stephanie, is Vince, and Shane. It's like, you gotta beat his ass.
That's the thing, and that's a problem that we've talked about plenty on here. Like, you know, for a blood feud, you have to start it a certain way, the match. You have to kind of wrestle a match a certain way, and they just didn't.
No, like I said, what kind of blood feud? Has been doling out their finishers. Like,
exactly. Like,
and yeah, I mean, it's funny. Like, you think about matches and whatever that are like this, Edge and Matt Hardy, I mean, they fought right away. It didn't work because it was a short, stupid match, but they did the right thing. They fought around the ring.
Yeah.
I mean, they didn't have any wrestling.
Yeah. So yeah, Triple H won after 25 minutes. Again, that part is what it is. But just it's a shame, and I think a strong main event would make this a more fondly remembered WrestleMania.
I do too.
Because it's not bad, outside of the couple things that everyone talks about.
Exactly. Exactly. Well, this ultimately ends up being remembered as a one match show, and it shouldn't be, but I guess them's the breaks when you underwhelm for a lot of the big advertised matches, you kind of just remember the one that delivered. So, perfectly fine WrestleMania, I would say, if I had to give it a number grade. I'll say 6.
Yeah,
6 or 7.
Of the ones we've watched, it feels a lot like 18, kind of.
Yeah.
Like, it's got the one big iconic match, and then,
the very underwhelming main event with Triple H.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's... Yeah. But, yeah. That was WrestleMania 25.
Yes. We will preview WrestleMania 41 when we return next week. You'll be able to listen to that podcast on Thursday, technically 2 days before WrestleMania on Saturday. We'll go through the card. I think right now we got 10 matches advertised, so presumably 4 more will be announced for the shows. And then, we'll see what happens, man. But excited to preview it. Excited to get into full WrestleMania mode. We're only a few days out. Shit's gonna start ramping up, so should be exciting. And hey, guess what? The NBA playoffs kick off next week. The play-in begins, I believe, Tuesday. Your Chicago Bulls will be in the play-in. Maybe the playoff, because Billy Donovan, the Hall of Famer, he just turns lemons into lemonade. So stay with the barber's chair as we get ready for not only WrestleMania, not only the NBA playoffs, but also the NFL draft. We are 2 weeks away, right? 2 weeks? I think we're 2 weeks away. We're 2 weeks, 2 weeks away from the NBA NFL draft in, unfortunately, Green Bay, Wisconsin. Bears got the 10th pick. Who gives a fuck where the Falcons draft? I don't know. I know we got a Falcons podcast. I'm going to be honest with you. I don't give a fuck where the Falcons draft. But if you want to pay attention to any of that, Saint at the Alice, King's Landing. I don't know if they'll have a show, but if they do, then be on the lookout for it. We'll have more wrestling content. First Black Champ will have stuff. I don't know what else to promote. I see we got a new baseball pod, so if that's your steez, go listen to that. And support the Barber's Chair, support everything we do. We will see you next week for the WrestleMania preview show. For now, I'm Pierce, for Rob and Chris. We'll see you guys later on Ruthless Aggression. Take it easy.
Hey, Central Ohio. The nationwide Children's Marathon will be taking over the city on October 18th and 19th. COTA riders can expect significant reroutes throughout the city. Operators will be working tirelessly to assist COTA customers. That's October 18th and 19th for the nationwide Children's Marathon. Expect significant reroutes downtown. You can view real-time updates on the transit app or at COTA.com. That's COTA.com. Good luck to all the runners.